Good afternoon. This is Dr. Dan Guerra coming to you from Authentic Biochemistry Podcast Studios in the Inland Pacific Northwest of the USA. Today is the 16th day of September, 2022. Now, last time we spent the last 10 minutes of lecture explaining how a transcription factor can also act as an activator of phospholipid synthesis by functioning to associate rate-limiting steps in phosphatidylcholine and, to a much lesser degree, phosphoinositol biosynthesis in the mitochondrion. That means a membrane association of those proteins, which catalyze the reactions have to occur, and somehow CFOS, the transcription factor, was involved in it. We talked about when it was dephosphorylated to tyrosine residue, it would translocate from the nucleus to the mitochondrion, where it would facilitate the association of acetyltransferase to drive phosphatidylcholine biosynthesis. And we also alluded to the fact that some of the enzymes that are directly linked to phosphatidylinositol were also translocated, but not all. So I wanted to kind of work that up and make sure that you understood the lipid biochemistry more exactly, because it can be confusing if you don't. And I think I went through that kind of quickly, which I don't like to do. So you have CFOS, which will translocate from the nucleus to the mitochondrion and thus become a phospholipid synthesis activator. Because one of the things it does is associate with that CDS enzyme. Now that's the enzyme that's going to be linked to the production of the CDP choline. Okay, so this is a really important step, because in order to synthesize phospholipids, such as phosphatidylinositol, phosphatidylserine, phosphatidylethanolamine, and phosphatidylcholine, you have to have those rate-limiting steps. So the synthesis of starting with phosphatidic acid to make CDP diacylglycerol, that reaction, which is CDP diacylglycerol, acetyltransferase, will generate CDP diacylglycerol, which is then basically the precursor, right? So I told you that CFOS was involved in that, but not in the activation of the phosphatidylinositol synthase or in the enzymes that add more phosphate to the inositol ring. And those include the phosphatidyl-1,4 kinase 2A and kinase 2B, which are both required for those subsequent phosphorylations of the inositol structure once it's associated with the phosphatidic acid, right? So that means that you get much higher levels of other phospholipid synthesis than PI45 bisphosphate. And that's important because, remember, phosphatidylinositols, particularly when they're phosphorylated in the sugar residue, act as signaling molecules. And that signaling pathway is not what's induced here for this phospholipid synthesis activator. We're talking about de novo phospholipid synthesis. Okay? So I wanted to put that in your memory so that we got to that point. Now, here's a little bit of basic biochemistry leading to basic lipid biochemistry. Remember that coming off of glycolysis, after you have fructose 1,6 bisphosphate, you will carry out the aldolase reaction and make equal molar amounts of dihydroxyacetone phosphate, which is a ketone, and glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. And that those two sugars are basically in equilibrium because of the enzyme triose isomerase. And so that's a really important step, because Now we have to talk about the synthesis of glycerol 3-phosphate. Now, as it turns out, the glycerol 3-phosphate can be synthesized from dihydroxyacetone phosphate via a dehydrogenase. Now, that particular enzyme will take dihydroxyacetone phosphate and NADH, synthesize from the ketone to the alcohol, glycerol 3-phosphate, and NAD. But the back reaction, which occurs in the cytosol, will take glycerol 3-phosphate and synthesize dihydroxyacetone phosphate. And I just told you that you make DAP, dihydroxyacetone phosphate, from glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate, right, via that isomerase. So what other reactions do you need to be worried about? Well, there's also a reaction which will just simply take glycerol and convert it to dihydroxyacetone. Dihydroxyacetone becomes phosphorylated, and that's another way to make dihydroxyacetone phosphate. Glycerol can only be also be phosphorylated directly, making glycerol 3-phosphate. Now, even beyond that, there is a membrane-bound enzyme. So those are cytosolic enzymes. There's a membrane-bound enzyme that will take glycerol 3-phosphate and synthesize DAP, right? The alcohol to the ketone. Now, that reaction utilizes FAD and converts it to FADH2. But the FADH2, to be resynthesized back to its oxidized form, requires ubiquinone being converted to dihydroubiquinone. And of course, that is part of the electron transport chain pathway. This is all intimately linked. Okay. So glucose comes into the cell. You can synthesize glycogen, or you can synthesize glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate, continuing glycolysis to pyruvate. Pyruvate can be converted to lactate via lactate dehydrogenase, but also pyruvate can go through the pyruvate dehydrogenase reaction, which is mitochondrial, and synthesize acetyl-CoA. Now, acetyl-CoA will condense with oxaloacetic acid, and it will eventually make citric acid. So that is the TCA cycle, which can continue to function even during lipid synthesis. In fact, the citrate will leave the mitochondrion and via the reaction known as ATP citrate lyase, synthesize now in the cytoplasm, acetyl-CoA and OAA. And it's the acetyl-CoA now in the cytoplasm, which can be used for fatty acid synthesis. That's one way you get the fatty acids that become esterified to the glycerol 3-phosphate, okay? So that's a very important aspect. Now, more details here, because I want you to really understand this. So dihydroxyacetone phosphate can be acylated to 1-acyl DAP. Likewise, glycerol 3-phosphate can be isolated to 1-acyl G3P. Now, If you add another fatty acid that's to the 2 position of that glycerol backbone, you'll have phosphatidic acid. Now, phosphatidic acid phosphatase will synthesize diacylglycerol. Now, let's go through that. Diacylglycerol can be used to make phosphatidylcholine, okay? Now, that's a really important reaction because it's utilizing CDP choline, which was converted by basically CTP and choline phosphate, right? So that reaction, CTP, phosphatidylcholine, cellular transferase, was one of the enzymes we were talking about that was regulating the curvature of the membrane, remember, because pulling diacylglycerol. Ultimately, to remove that curvature, a negative curvature. Choline directly can be phosphorylated to choline phosphate. And because that cellular transferase makes CDP choline, CDP choline plus diacylglycerol in the CPT reaction. Okay, now that particular reaction is CDP choline 1,2 diacylglycerol, choline, phosphotransferase. That will directly make phosphatidylcholine. The same time, diacylglycerol coming from the phosphatic acid phosphatase. That diacylglycerol can also be used in a reaction that synthesizes phosphatidylethanolamine. Now that will be happening at the same time that you're making phosphatidylcholine, but at various levels of substrate to product conversion, depending on the equivalency and the amount of reactive either CDP choline or CDP ethanolamine. So you make CDP ethanolamine by taking ethanolamine, phosphorylating it, and then carrying out a CDP ethanolamine cytotransferase reaction, making CDP ethanolamine. Then CDP ethanolamine and diacylglycerol will make PE, that's phosphatidylethanolamine. Now phosphatidylethanolamine can be methylated three times. Trimethylphosphatidylethanolamine is phosphatidylcholine. So it's another way to make PC. Likewise, phosphatidylethanolamine, once synthesized with the reaction I just told you, it can react with serine via the reaction phosphatidylserine synthase, and that will make phosphatidylserine and free ethanolamine, which is, of course, free to be phosphorylated and then converted to the nucleotide that is CDP ethanolamine. So that's going to happen to diacylglycerol when phosphatidic acid phosphate is removed by the phosphatase. The phosphatidic acid can also be the precursor, because you can synthesize diacylglycerol from it to make CDP diacylglycerol. So here you're using diacylglycerol as a nucleotide rather than the head group nucleotide, right? Last few minutes, we were talking about CDP choline and CDP ethanolamine. Now we're talking about CDP diacylglycerol. CDP diacylglycerol can be used to form phosphatidylglycerol phosphate. Remove the phosphate, you make phosphatidylglycerol. Another molecule of CDP diacylglycerol with phosphatidylglycerol will make diphosphatidylglycerol, and that's cardiolipin. That's an important mitochondrial membrane lipid. Likewise, CDP diacylglycerol can be used to make phosphatidyl inositol by reacting with the sugar, right, which can be activated by the nucleotide conversion reactions. And phosphatidylinositol can be further phosphorylated, as we just said. So PI can be converted to PIP or PI45P2 or PI135P3 or 145P3. So those inositol rings can be phosphorylated variably. Okay, so that's a basic structure. Now, more detail even than that, when you make phosphatidic acid, just going all the way back to PA from diacylglycerol, right? From one acyl glycerol 3-phosphate, you can synthesize phosphatidic acid either from the endoplasmic reticulum membrane or the mitochondrial outer membrane. So at any rate, you have to start with acyl-CoA synthetase so that you synthesize from fatty acid acyl-CoAs. The acyl-CoA then can react directly with glycerol 3-phosphate to make lysophosphatidic acid. Okay, that's what the product of that reaction will be. Now, that reaction, which is glycerol 3-phosphate acyl transferase, again, it takes G3P and acyl-CoA. There is an isoform of it in the endoplasmic reticulum, and there's an isoform of it in the outer mitochondrial membrane. And the outer mitochondrial membrane isoform tends to prefer saturated fatty acids rather than unsaturated fatty acids. Hence, a different molecular species will come out of that pathway because you're altering the fatty acid composition of the glycerol phosphate, so that acylglycerol phosphate, so that when you make phosphatic acid, you're going to have a different molecular species for all subsequent reactions. For example, those making PI, PE, PS, and PC, to name the major ones, right? So likewise, the ER has its own reaction of one acyl glycerol 3-phosphate acyl transferase, which will take lysophosphatidic acid and make phosphatidic acid. So that second fatty acid, catalyzed by that reaction I just told you, one acylglycerol 3-phosphate acyl transferase, there are two isoforms of that enzyme too. So there are two isoforms of the acyl-CoA synthase. There are two isoforms of the GPAT enzyme. That's the glycerol 3-phosphate acyl transferase. And then there are two isoforms of the AAT enzyme. That's one acylglycerol 3-phosphate acyl transferase. So there's two different isoforms depending on the ER or the mitochondrion. All of that's going to end up making phosphatidic acid of different molecular species. Okay. So then, ultimately, you can react phosphatidic acid with what I just told you can occur from the last few minutes via a phosphatase reaction, phosphatidic acid phosphatase, which is an ER localized phosphohydrolase, and that will make diacylglycerol. There's where the diacylglycerol, this is now on the endoplasmic reticulum, where most of the phospholipid occurs, as I've been saying. Once you make DAG there at the ER, then you can make PC, PE, and even make triacylglycerol. Okay? So those are really important understandings of these reactions, because if you don't get that, you're not understanding the complexity of CFOS works to control phospholipids. Now, we haven't even started talking about the ceramides yet. Okay, ceramide phosphates and the sphingoid lipids. These are just glycerol lipids. Now, here's a little bit more of interesting note, okay, of interesting note. When you make choline phosphate, that enzyme, choline kinase, right? The next reaction is to make CDP choline. And remember, that reaction is being carried out by that cytidyl transferase, right? So as it turns out, that enzyme, okay, such that PC synthesis via the CDP choline pathway, that enzyme is modulated by the binding of the CTP phosphonylcholine cytidyl transferase. That enzyme that we've been talking a lot about the last three lectures has to be bound to the membrane. And so there are multiple ways to regulate that cytidyl transferase. One is if the cytidyl transferase is moved to the soluble or cytoplasmic domain of the cell, it's inactive. Only the membrane-bound cytidyl transferase is active. And to move from the membrane-bound to the soluble cytosolic form, what can cause that is increases in phosphatidylcholine, which is a product ultimately, decreases in diacylglycerol, which is a substrate ultimately, or an increase just in the phosphorylation of the enzyme. We'll move it from the membrane to cytoplasm. Now, that's the same thing you saw with CFOS, right? Now, why is that? Because when you have that phosphoanhydride, you have that anionic structure on the protein that's going to be a charged molecular species, and it's not going to do well in association with the hydrophobic regions of the membrane. So it will move away from the membrane when you've added charge to it. So that one phosphate can make all the difference in the world of whether or not you go through this phosphatidylcholine or PE or PS or PI biosynthesis, because of the movement of all those enzymes to the correct membrane-associated location. So that's one way that you regulate it. Now, also the reaction takes CDP choline and makes phosphatidylcholine, right? Now that, again, that's CDP choline 1,2 diacylglycerol choline phosphotransferase, right? CDP choline plus DAG makes PC. Now that reaction also is regulated so that as long as there is sufficient amount of substrate, CDP choline, it'll drive the reaction to PC. But when PC builds up, the reaction will be inhibited, and actually you'll build up CDP choline, the precursor. Okay. There's another reaction to consider, two more really. There's the phosphatidylethanolamine methyltransferase, which is talked about. That's going to make PC directly from PE, because remember, choline is trimethylethanolamine. And remember, you made the ethanolamine from decarboxylating serine, which is the amino acid. But there's one other way to do it, and that's taking lysophosphatidylcholine and with the acyl transferase making phosphatidylcholine. And again, that reaction is going to proceed as long as there are high levels of lyso-PC. But when PC levels build up, the reaction will go in the other way, losing that fatty acid. So there's multiple layers of regulation simply of the enzymes involved in making phosphatidylcholine and indirectly, I should say, phosphatidylethanolamine and phosphatidylserine, because they are going to be, of course, part of that pathway, as you know. Again, and so there are multiple layers of regulation here. So remember also that you need 3 molecules of S-adenosylmethionine to take phosphatidylethanolamine and convert it to phosphatidylcholine. So that is the methionine cycle, which regulates this, the accumulation of S-adenosylmethionine, is just as important as all of these phospholipid reactions or the translocation of the protein to the membrane, because you have to have, for at least for PC synthesis, because you have to have adequate amounts of adenosylmethionine to be able to trimethylate ethanolamine. So that's not normally thrown in the mix, but we have talked about in the past the regulation of that. So there's just a tremendous amount of regulation. Now that's only really, I won't say it's scratching the surface, because that's unfair. It's more than scratching the surface. I gave you a pretty good synthesis of the information. Now, remember too that a major fate of phosphatidic acid is going to be diacylglycerol, and you're going to have it metabolized to PC, PE, triacylglycerol. But PA, phosphatidic acid, can also react directly with CTP, as we've just said, to make CDP diacylglycerol. And now that CDP DAG can be used for the synthesis of all the inositol phospholipids, as well as phosphatidylglycerol and cardiolipin. Now remember that what inositol is, okay, it's a sugar. Inositol is actually a cyclohexane derivative of glucose, okay, where all of the 6 carbons in inositol actually have hydroxyl groups. So each one of those hydroxyl groups, 6 on a 6 carbon sugar, inositol, each one of those hydroxyl groups can receive a phosphate. In fact, if all of those phosphates are added to all 6 of those hydroxyl groups, you basically make a compound called phytic acid, right? And that's made in plants, and it can cause a corruption of metabolism if it's consumed in high quantities in animals, either in ruminants or in other mammals. Okay, now that's another story that I've talked about a couple of times in the past, but sometimes I like to do animal science stuff because it's interesting, because of the way animals are fed grain, you have to be careful about too much phytic acid. And we'll, sometime or other, I'll bring that up and we'll talk about it at a clinical level. But that's the inositol, okay? So the regulation of conversion of phosphatidic acid to CDP diacylglycerol is very complicated, because the enzyme itself CDP diacylglycerol synthase is another one of these ER enzymes that is also found in the inner mitochondrial membrane, meaning that when you have fission versus fusion of mitochondria, you're going to be exposing that enzyme to potential parent to offspring transfer, if this is going to be a fission reaction making new mitochondria, or you could lose that enzyme and the mitochondria will be non-functional, right? Non-functional for utilizing that really important step in phospholipid metabolism. So again, if you don't have enough CDP diacylglycerol synthase, then you're not going to be able to carry out all these other phospholipid reactions, at least one half of them, right? All the ones that start off with nucleotide lipid rather than nucleotide sugar or polar head group, right? All right. So there's an enzyme, so that's important. So then there's the enzyme PI synthase. That's phosphoinositol synthase. Now, again, you can make inositol from glucose. You can also get inositol in the diet, right? As I just said. So PI synthase is an enzyme that's been studied to some extent. And I'm going to leave that alone for now, just to let you know that PI synthase starts with CDP diacylglycerol and then inositol, right? And that's how you make that particular phospholipid. So, all right. So I think we're gonna stop talking about PI now, because if I get into phosphatidylinositol pathways, it's going to have to, of course, bring in that whole mechanism of PI cascade or the inositol cascade, where the sugar, the inositol, depending on its level of phosphorylation, and the phospholipid, once the sugar is removed, that would be phosphatidic acid or conversions to other lipids, as you know, including ether-linked lipids, by the way. And sphingolipids lipids, too, can use that backbone portion of it. Means that it's an entire pathway of signaling, which involves calcium and alterations of gene expression and membrane fluidity and membrane curvature. We're going to leave that to an entirely different topic, the whole PI story. But that is the reason that there's a discrimination between all the other phospholipid biosynthetic pathways and PI, because PI has a very unique role as a signaling lipid in mammalian cells. And that's because the sugar inositol, when it's variably phosphorylated, has its own mechanisms of signal transduction cascade. Okay. So I think that's all I want to talk about. That's my little synthesis of lipid lecture. So I want to talk about that right now. Okay. So going back to CFOS, all right. So that was all to explain to you about the phospholipid pathways, you understand it, and also the subcellular localization and the regulation of many of the other enzymes involved, right? I just told them to you. Now, remember that CFOS can generate this AP1 protein. And AP1 is going to be a dimer. It's going to be a leucine zipper domain dimer that's going to be utilized as a transcription factor for the production of transcripts, right? It's going to be in the nucleus. But when CFOS is not forming that AP, right, when it is dephosphorylated tyrosine residue, remember it's leaving the nucleus and it's doing all this phospholipid work, right? So this is really important because it suggests that the enzymes involved in phospholipid synthesis, some of which I just mentioned to you, have to physically encounter CFOS. In fact, when experiments were conducted, you can do an immunoprecipitation by using antibodies to CFOS or to any of the enzymes in phospholipid synthesis.